We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. Our presenting sponsor is BetUS, a place for you with the NBA finals here to wager on the games. At BetUS, they have great payouts, the industry's biggest bonuses, and every bet type you can dream of. You can join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. Get 125% sign up bonus using the promo code Dane125. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid. All right, today's show is with Will DeBerg, who joins me for all of these draft film review podcasts that we did last year and have done so far this year. Will is a assistant men's basketball coach locally here in St. Paul at the University of St. Thomas, and we assigned ourselves a film review of Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga of the G League Ignite team. And Will, I think the place to kind of frame this conversation before we start talking about who Green and Kuminga are individually is just kind of about the G League in general. And I'm curious of your perspective as a coach on how this environment for assessing a prospect compared to when you've watched international prospects or just general, you know, NCAA college basketball prospects. What were similarities, differences?
I mean, yeah, I think, well, to start, like, I think it's important to understand, like, those guys are still really dang good in the G League. Like, it's not
totally
like the difference between an NBA player and a G League player is very, very small. So it felt more than anything, it felt like you're watching an NBA game, you know.
I agree completely.
And you know, for me personally, I watched obviously a lot of college basketball. I've watched some international basketball with some experience over there. So it's what I watched the least of, but still, I mean, just again, the talent that's in it, the style of play, the way the offense is, like, every little thing like that is very reminiscent of the actual NBA.
Yeah, it screams NBA, and I think also just watching when we're watching these games, the players they're playing against, I mean, actually a lot of them were the dudes we watched last season as we were assessing, you know, that crop of draft prospects. So you're playing against, you know, the Tyrell Terrys, yep, the Paul Reeds, a bunch of, you know, kind of high-level prospects or guys who have been in the league for a while, and Amir Coffey on the Clippers they played against. You know, it is NBA-level players, literally players who are playing in the NBA this season who have been on 10 days, have been on two ways.
I mean, Jarrett Jack was the point guard on this, exactly, on this Ignite team.
Jarrett Jack on the Ignite team. Amir Johnson was also, yep, on it. And I think they had one other NBA guy, but for sure those two guys. So yeah, it was, and I'm with you too. I haven't watched a lot of G League in, you know, in my time either, but it reminds me a lot of, or reminded me a lot of when I've been at Summer League watching games, and kind of like a step or two above that, or Summer League's kind of the first couple of days are the best, where the best players are playing. It kind of felt like that. And for me, in just kind of prefacing Green and Kuminga, for those two to look as athletic as they did within the context of something that looks like the NBA or very close to the NBA, that matters a lot for me in my assessment of both of these guys.
You kind of stole the, I mean, I was going to say the same thing. The difference from high level Division I basketball, like a lot of the guys that we watch doing these and the G League, like it's, there is a huge jump as far as athleticism goes.
Yep.
And so, yeah, for those guys to stand out as 18-year-old, 19-year-olds in the G League, I just think bodes well. I mean, you just, you know, it's easier to picture them in the NBA.
Yep.
Because those are the athletes they're going to be going up against.
Totally. And I think, and we're going to start with Jalen Green, but I think Jonathan Kuminga, to me, it really stood out how big he was. Because, again, we're watching him play against NBA players or low-end NBA players, and he is not only so much more athletic than a lot of them, but also so much bigger than they were. And you know, and Jalen Green, to some extent, too, is he didn't totally play point guard, but he was kind of a combo guard-type player. And sometimes, even in the NBA, good combo guards are a little undersized. And he didn't strike me as undersized in any sort of way. There's been some kind of, like, varying... markers of what Jalen Green's like physical measurements are in this. Like if you go to the Ringer, it says he's 165 pounds, which is just, that is actually inaccurate. I asked some people and they said, and you can just look up like when he went to Nike camp and stuff, he's like 175, 180. So what I've heard is Jalen Green is 185 pounds right now, 6'5", 6'8" wingspan, 185 pounds. And that's not huge, but it's a lot of like two guards in the league or kind of like one and a halfs, which I assume Jalen Green will kind of play in the league, kind of starting going back to like 2011, I think it was. Ben McLemore is that size, 6'5", 6'8", 189. Elfrid Payton, 6'4", 6'8", 185. Jordan Clarkson is almost exactly Jalen Green's size. And this is these NBA players when they came in. To our Timberwolves listeners, D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley are about that size. D'Lo's 6'5", actually has a 6'10 wingspan, weighs 193. Beasley's 6'4.5", 6'7", 190. Derek White is also the same size. I threw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on the list I sent you just because I see some kind of similarities in their game. And now I'm looking at it. I don't think I listed his wingspan, but he is, let me check my notes here. Shai was 6'6", 6'11 and a half wingspan, 180. And then Tale Maledon, who was a rookie last year, is also this exact same size. So again, as I always do, it's helpful for me to understand how big these guys are so as to picture them in the NBA. I guess that was a little bit less relevant now because I was watching them in the G League. But I guess just physically before we get into Green as like a player, what did you see of him as a physical freak?
I mean, the first thing that stands out is just how he's got a gear that he can get to that is just on a different level. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Like he doesn't play at that whatever gear all the time, but I mean he had a couple cuts for dunks and fast breaks for dunks and lobs for dunks that were just like it kind of makes you realize that not a lot of guys can do that. Do you know what I mean? So just from a pure athleticism standpoint, just different than most guys.
Yeah, I think, and again, a lot of the listeners are Timberwolves fans, so Zach LaVine's going to be a comp that people are going to hear for him a lot, but I think that is, at least in terms of athleticism and the what you kind of see when he's playing, that just electric athleticism is something that Zach LaVine had from day one as a scrawny kid, lost on the Timberwolves, to what Jalen Green has now, and obviously Zach LaVine's kind of blossomed into a hell of a player for a lot of different reasons, but something he's had from day one is really an electric athleticism, and Jalen Green, he'll have his need to grow in many ways too, but he will be an electric athlete in the NBA next season.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think there's a difference between just being able to jump super high and being in a, like an overall electric athlete. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like Jalen Green's like balance and the way he could finish through contact for being relatively underweight for now, like, there is something to him. And I think the LaVine comparison is probably a good one for now. Just some of the things he does makes you just, you know, kind of go, wow. And
yeah, I think that the biggest difference, and just because when I've read around or listened around to other things, is LaVine, you'll hear a lot for him. And a big difference in, maybe not a big difference, but right, Zach LaVine's an elite three-point shooter right now in the league. And I don't think Green being a good shooter is out of the question at all. But just that's the nature of kind of the two-guard, the lead ball handler sort of position, is the ability to not only make open jump shots, but to be able to pull up and shoot them. And Jalen Green was doing that in the G League for G League Ignite. He didn't shoot like an insane percentage, I think 36.5% on 85 attempts, which is solid. I don't take too much from any of the numbers that happened in this G League time, but watching and just watching him, he is a player, as I would assess him as a prospect, of somebody who I could see being a guard who gets a high screen, and if the big drops or if the guard goes under the screen, that you can feel good about him being able to knock that down at a high clip eventually, or a solid clip.
Yeah, eventually. And I think 36.5% is pretty solid for an 18-year-old in that mm-hmm. environment. Like, I think that bodes well. I think LaVine in college, and again, that's not apples to apples as far as competition, but LaVine was upper 30s also. So he's made a jump shooting since he's gotten to the league. But yeah, I think offensively, like, you know, he's got a chance to be an all three levels guy, put the ball in his hands, run high pick and roll, and just kind of be, you know, one of those guys that you kind of just give him the ball and say, go make something happen, you know? And, cause from a talent standpoint on offense, like, he's, you know, right. He's got a chance to be one of those guys.
So again, you mentioned Jarrett Jack. Oh, and Bobby Brown. That was the other NBA
player. Yeah. Yep.
Jarrett Jack and Bobby Brown are on his team, and they took a lot of point guard duty time and just blank slate coming into it. Having the little knowledge I knew about it, I kind of thought Jalen Green, you know, was playing in the G League, whatever, like, he, you know, is going to kind of be a point guard for this team. He really often functioned as a secondary, but also lead ball handler. I think it would be fair to say he played shooting guard in the G League. And I don't know. I guess I'm curious if that's where he will ultimately land as a second side creator, or will he be a point guard in the league? Do you think that is still up in the air? And like a team will pick based on their assessment or their roster, or do you think he ends up being for sure a point guard or for sure an off ball guy?
I mean, I think these always come down to, I think, where you go, who you play with. Like, if Jared Jack wasn't on that team, I think he probably would have been a point guard. And so, I don't know. Like, watching the NBA finals, right? You've got Chris Paul and Devin Booker. You've got Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton. And, like, is Chris Middleton the point guard? No. But does he run a ton of pick and roll? Yes. Is Devin Booker the point guard? No. But does he run a ton of pick and roll? Yes. So, like,
which is kind of another way of saying this is a stupid question. Like,
in a way, like,
it is in the NBA. No, it is.
So,
like,
I don't
do this all the time, and it is.
I've never liked the argument, what position is he? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because I think, who cares? Like, what he's, I don't know. So if I had to bet, I would say he'd be more of the off ball guy, more of the role he played in the G League. And that's partly because almost every starting point guard in the NBA is really, really damn good. So it's not really like a knock on him to say he's going to be the off ball guy, but it's just, I don't know. I think what did you think of him off the ball? Like, cause I thought he was at his best when you put the ball in his hands and you were like, you know.
Yeah, I think so too. But sometimes putting the ball in a guy's hands when that's not the primary, the initial action, and you're getting it to, you know, that's your secondary action, or it's reversed to the second side, and then he's creating. Like, I thought he was awesome in those spots, but just like in general, he looked a little antsy. He looked a little bit just like lost, just as like a spot up guy. Cause I doubt he's ever done that before.
Ever.
You know what I mean? And so again, it's why I put Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in there, even though the size didn't work exactly the same. It's interesting with Shai to go from having kind of played point guard, with the Clippers, and then he goes, then he's on the, you know, he's on the Thunder, and you got CP and you got Schroeder and you got Shai. And so he's playing so much more in that kind of second side role that we're talking about. But then they lose Schroeder, they lose CP, and he's back last year playing point guard, and with Shai looked awesome at all of them. And I think sometimes it's not about that there is a certainly a better or worse sort of thing. And I think the team that brings him in will decide based on the personnel that they have. I think the personnel around him will kind of determine
what
position you get the most out of him, you know, right away. And that's why it's going to be interesting which one of these teams he comes to next year. Cause where do you add in terms of what he'll be able to produce as like a rookie? Do you think he's one of those guys where, you know, it's going to take some time, or do you think he'll be right away?
Like, if you told me next year that you think he'll average 20 a game, I would say I agree. I think he's that.
Yeah.
And it depends where he goes, right? And who's right. the other guard next to him. But if he goes to, I don't know, Houston, like,
right.
I think there's a chance that a team just puts.
I think it's probably likely.
Yeah. I think a team, you know, if a team just kind of puts the ball in his hands, like, what did Ant finish the year averaging? 18, 17?
I think he got up maybe even to like 19.
Yeah. And I think Ant had a lot more talented offensive players around him, where if Ant didn't have Cat,
right.
You know, I think Ant would have been in the low. So my point is that I think he's talented and good enough on offense to walk into an NBA team next year and average high teens, low 20s on a bad NBA team.
So I'm getting the sense that you're pretty high on him.
Yeah, I am.
What, before we get into any minuses, because I am too, how as a prospect did he compare to you in terms of like Cade as an offensive prospect?
I mean, the thing with Cade that I think Cade's size and vision and shot is on such another level where I think Cade's floor is just so high. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I agree.
And I don't feel the same about like Jalen Green also might struggle for a few years. Whereas Cade, I just, we're not experts at this by any means, but I just don't see a world where Cade Cunningham isn't really, really good, really, really early. And that's kind of where I'm like, I think he's just on another tier by himself.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, Green falls into the same camp that that I think Mobley does and Kuminga does, where I think there's a world where it's a year or two before we're like, oh, there we go.
Yep.
Or like a year before we're like, here we go. Clicked into place. We know he's going to be a good player. Cade, I'm with you. Like, it's hard for me to see it. I'm not in the, like, Cade's going to be a superstar boat. I am in the, it's hard for me to see Cade Cunningham not being good in the NBA boat. And so, for me, not to, like, get all big board with it, but, like, Green is not on that level. But he is for sure in, you know, in that next group for me.
Compare Green to Suggs, because those are the two guys I think that, depending on who you talk to and who you ask, they're interchangeable. And I think, again, you're more connected than I am, but I think if you pulled the GMs, I think it would be pretty split on who teams would rather have. And maybe I'm wrong, but
the sense I'm getting is Green over Suggs.
Okay, right, which is funny because not to cut you off, they are very different.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, why don't you describe the differences between them?
Like, I think what I like most about Jalen is his scoring and his elite level offensive ball in his hands, go get a bucket. And that's my biggest concern with Jalen. With Suggs.
Yeah, it was Suggs.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I've got no doubt that Jalen Green is going to be able to score at a high level in the NBA. Jalen Suggs, I think he has a chance to, but I'm a little bit less.
That's what we talked about before.
Yeah.
Is he going to be able to shoot it at a high level? Yes. Is he going to be able to finish at the rim against NBA competition?
However, I think Suggs is going to be a very, very good defender, like an elite defender. And I think he is going to be an elite, like, leader, point guard, passer, like everything you want there. I'm not sure Jalen Green is. I'm not sure Jalen Green can do anything else that well when he doesn't have the ball in his hands.
Which kind of brings us to the defense with Jalen Green. That's a question mark. And I don't know. Defense, watching these G League games, I'm like, I don't know. Do they care? They care about it? I don't know. Every game. And half of these G League Ignite games, they were getting blown out by 30 or they were blowing somebody out by 30. So it wasn't – if somebody's going to come and, like, pound the table on the fact that from watching G League tape that Jalen Green is a terrible defender or that Jonathan Kuminga is an awesome defender, I'm going to be like, get out of here.
Right.
Like, you don't we don't know from that. It's – I think if we're assessing them as defensive players – You're gonna do that when you bring them in for a workout. You're gonna be testing their, you know, their size, but also their agility and speed and those sort of things. Green, what I would imagine, is not gonna test in those sort of defensive ways as, you know, as well. He's not 165, but he's not big. He's not strong. And you saw him in that game against the Rockets G League team, and he's guarding Kevin Porter Jr. And you know, and that's, he couldn't handle them. And he got clobbered by screens all the time and also didn't seem to totally care about that. You know, the focus of both of these G League players was getting buckets in the G League. And that's really with Jalen Suggs, that's the opposite. Like, Jalen Suggs so clearly took pride in being the best defender every game for his team and on the floor. Like, he was just went and took the ball away from people every game, multiple times. Jalen Green, I don't know, was there an impressive defensive play? Like, I mean, sometimes he looked athletic and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, I could see him being good. I don't know. Like, Jalen Suggs is such a safe bet to be a good defender.
Yeah. And I think, like, for me, and this comes from, like, the coaching background, one of, like, maybe the first thing I look at, whether it's a high school kid, a college kid, or whatever, is, like, within the first 5 or 10 minutes, in my mind, I think, does this guy give a shit? Does he care? Like, does, like, and it doesn't take a long time to learn that. And I think that's another reason why I think Cade is awesome, is because I watch Cade and I'm like, this kid's 18. He's going to be the first pick. He's going to be a millionaire. He gives a shit. Like, he really cares, offense, defense. Like, he's into it. Suggs, same way. He gives a shit. Jalen Green, I thought actually maybe a B minus B in that category.
Huh. I thought I
were Kuminga. Where Kuminga, I would say a D, like, borderline fail. Like,
yeah, I just wonder how much of that is G. I don't know. Like, and part of this.
And you're right. G League is harder to evaluate than a college game.
Yeah, yeah. Like the give a shit factor you see in the NCAA all the time. I mean, that if there's something great about,
but like
college basketball, it's that.
But that was my biggest worry about Ant last year was that.
Mm. Yeah,
I didn't think Ant cared at all.
Right.
And I was proven wrong. So that, again, not to talk about Cade Cunningham the whole time, but that's what I love about Cade and Suggs. I thought Jalen Green actually had moments.
Yeah.
Where Kuminga I watched and I'm like, this dude would rather be just about anywhere.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't help to be like, oh, you took the path where there's the money, there's the fewer games, there's those sort of things. But again, I'm going to try and not with both of these guys. And I don't know, like, we don't know if the G League is good or if it's bad. It's all just a theory people have of if this was better for them or if this was worse for them. And I think a lot of people say it was worse for them, but we don't know. Like, I can make a strong argument of both ways. And I think we started making that of seeing these guys play against NBA talent. I haven't seen Evan Mobley or Jalen Suggs or Scottie Barnes play against a lot of NBA talent, right? You know, and it's hard. You know, it's tricky. I don't know. For me, I wouldn't put Kuminga is just so much more. He's off ball and a little bit more disengaged. I thought when I watched Jalen Green, he looked pretty engaged, and I would give him like the pass. I might give this. Give a shit test.
Yeah, I mean, I said a B minus. Like, yeah. I think he really struggled in screens, especially off the ball.
Yeah,
he would. You could just tell he wasn't sure if he should trail, if he should go under. Like, if I was the opposing team, and I think teams did this. I think teams seeked him.
Isn't that just coaching a lot? Like,
it is, but like,
I just question the coaching that they got. But I don't know.
I mean, in college, man, we're like, don't go. You know, so many times we're like, don't go under the screen. Sure enough, game gets going fast under the screen three. And it's like, how many, you know what I mean? So it's like, and maybe it is coaching. Maybe coaches have to do a better job, say it more, whatever. But yeah, man, I don't know. I think, look, I don't think he's going to be an elite defender, but I do think he cares. I do think he's got a pretty good sense of like, you know, reads and where to be and help side and all that.
At a young age.
Yeah. So I'm more worried about Kuminga's effort, care, like give a shit. I don't know.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll talk some Kuminga. The NBA finals are here and this summer's betting action is heating up with my friends over at BetUS. Looking at some of the odds over at BetUS, the Phoenix Suns are now up 2-0 in the series and they are heavy favorites to win the NBA finals. According to BetUS, BetUS has the Suns at -480 to win the series, which means if you risked $100 on the Suns winning the series, you'd win $21 if they did.
The bet to make is Chris Paul to win the finals MVP, though, if you like the Suns. The Suns are minus 480 to win the series, right? And CP is minus 150 to win finals MVP. That gap doesn't add up, so throw some money on CP3. And with UFC, MLB, golf, Summer Olympics, and football season all just around the corner, you need a sports book. BetUS has the industry's biggest bonuses, every kind of bet type you could dream of. BetUS has been a pioneer in online betting for over 25 years and prides itself on being America's favorite sports book. So take advantage of this action-packed summer and sign up today at BetUS.com. It's BetUS.com or 1-800-69-BETUS. Receive 125% sign-up bonus when you use the promo code DANE125. And if you miss tip-off, forget to bet. That's not a problem. BetUS has live betting as well. The NFL is here. You can bet on week one lines also at BetUS. If you care for blackjack, spin at the reels, there are hundreds of games at the BetUS casino. I bet at BetUS, so should you. Join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid.
We make USAA insurance for veterans like Liz and Mike. When they got a bigger car for their soon-to-be bigger family, USAA helped them get covered and find savings.
That was the easy part.
USAA, what you're made of, we're made for.
All right, well, so Jonathan Kuminga was Jalen Green's teammate, at least for some of the time, while he was there. He is a gigantic athletic freak. That's undeniable. We spent a long time when we were talking about Cade Cunningham, just lauding the idea of a wing who's 6'8", 7 foot wingspan, 220 pounds. Kuminga and Cade Cunningham are the same size, and that's just the ideal type of guy that you want. That is the Paul George. That's your Tobias Harris. That's your Harrison Barnes. That's your Chris Middleton. That's your almost Kawhi Leonard, Dorian Finney-Smith, Aaron Gordon, Jeremy Grant, Cam Reddish, those sort of guys. Like, Jonathan Kuminga has all of the physical tools to be a really good wing two-way player in the league. And I think a lot of times, in a lot of ways, he did show it. And in some ways, he didn't. It sounds like from our Green section that you're a little bit more skeptical on him.
I mean, so I watched a G League game, a random G League game. It was like at 11 o'clock in the morning, some random game. And I was like, oh, I know these, you know, it was before I ever really watched Jalen Green or Jonathan Kuminga. But I was like, oh, the Ignite team. I know. So I flipped it on, and Kuminga had like 25 points in the first half. Some 20 points. So it just went off. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, who is this guy? And so, you know, in my head before we started doing this, I was like, I feel like I'm going to be like pretty high on him just because, you know, when you watch somebody randomly live
and they
ball out, you just kind of feel like I watched them early. Like that's my, you know, you have this like weird little,
it's like that band that you've heard of before.
Before everybody else. Yeah. So, and Kuminga was like the third ranked high school prospect. It wasn't like a,
you were way ahead of
Yeah. It wasn't like a, you know, a sleeper by any means, but then I don't know. Dude, so I watched more Kuminga than Jalen. I just felt like I got a better feel of Jalen Green. And so I was like, I need to spend more time. So I watched probably, you know, 70% Kuminga, 30% Jalen Green. And
I did too, man.
I came up with the conclusion. I have no idea. Like I have, you could tell me out of everybody in the top, like six or seven, I could see literally any scenario for him.
So we'll get into specifics about him and shot and defense and all of this and that, rebounding, but this might sound weird, but I want to talk to you about it because we did this last year with LaMelo where we didn't know. And it sounds dumb to compare LaMelo Ball to Jonathan Kuminga. It does. Because for all the questions we had about LaMelo Ball, basketball IQ was not one of them. With Jonathan Kuminga, basketball IQ is one of them.
Probably the one.
The one. But I do have similarities in it where see similarities where LaMelo Ball was a huge guard who had passing ability to play in a pick and roll heavy NBA. That is why he was my number one prospect last year. And that was and obviously you watch the tape too. It's not just any big point guard. You're like, I love you. But you know, you start being like, I see this is where the NBA is going. That's going to help. That's going to give LaMelo more stars in my book. If there is another archetype of player in the NBA today that similarly has this additional value, it is the oversized 6'8", 7-foot wingspan wing who can score at all three levels and defend for you on the other side of the floor. It's if LaMelo's the Luka, right, in terms of point guard archetype, then Kuminga is the, you know, is the Paul George type of guy in that sort of way. And those, to me, in the modern NBA, particularly in the playoffs, are the two most valuable. If it clicks, the ceiling is just so much higher. And the value is so much higher. And I know you're already shaking your head at me over there, but
I'm nodding my head.
Okay, you're nodding your head. I just think that Jonathan Kuminga has it in there to be great. To be really great, and the numbers won't suggest it. And the times where you see him, you know, making a bad decision will convince you against it, and all those sort of things. But there's a lot of things to be excited about, and those things to be excited about, I think, can either be Paul George and be awesome, and even the step down is like OG Anunoby, something like that, and an awesome defender. I'm not saying Kuminga doesn't have a low floor, because I could see that too, where he just doesn't get it with the basketball IQ. But he is the type of player that I think you want in the NBA right now. I think he's coming into the league at a perfect time where he can play multiple different positions and be really impactful for a team in the league for, obviously, at a high level and for a long time to come.
I actually completely agree with you. It sounds like you're going to be higher on him than I am. But I think, yeah, when I say nothing would surprise me.
Oh, I'm agree with, I'm with that, too.
Like, I think, yeah, there's one scenario where he puts it together. You make the whole, well, he didn't give a shit because he was playing in high school basketball in the G League. But now he's the LaMelo. Now he's with NBA guys.
Right.
Now he's like, all right, I'm going to get my act together. And like physically, he's unbelievable, right? He's strong. He's tall. He's athletic. Like, great first step. Gets low to the ground. Like, if you could design an NBA athlete in the lab, that's kind of the guy like you're talking about. He fits that mold, right?
And I see a lot of people talking about him like he's raw. And when I think of like raw, I think of like Sekou Doumbouya, who's got this size and all this stuff too, but has never shown, there isn't tape out there of him knowing how to dribble,
right,
or doing the, and you know, it's not like those guys can't work either. Giannis was that coming in, right? But Kuminga, he has this size, he has this athleticism, and he has a bag, and he has a stroke. There aren't things where I'm like, he can't do.
So right? you're a believer in his shot.
See, I don't know, and I want to talk to you about that too. Obviously, the numbers are, what was it? He shot 24.6% like from
16
three.
16 of 60 something?
Yeah, 65. Yeah. So it was, I mean, and his true shooting percentage was awful. Like, his shooting was bad. But if you go and watch the shots, they're difficult. He's getting all those Wiggins grenades, right? Late shot clock. They're like, oh, where's Kuminga? We screwed up the play. Four seconds left. Just shoot it. You know? And so I'm not dismissing the stats, but I don't think he's going to be like an elite shooter in the NBA. It's not like, you know, when we talk about these big wings, it's not going to be like KD, where he's going to be able to like come in to do that. But he could be a mechanical shot guy. I mean, it's funny. I'm watching this at the same time, watching a lot of these G League games while the Bucks-Hawks series was going on. And he's a lot like Cam Reddish to me, like in that sort of way where you're like, well, if the shot works, it's a pretty awesome player. And the shot's a little bit mechanical, but comfortable. He's comfortable with it. It didn't, at least to me, and it sounds like maybe you're going to go in a different direction. I don't think he's going to be like a broke shooter.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I think it looks fine. I think the threes he will take in the NBA will be pretty routine rhythm threes. Like, he's never going to be asked to make tough shots. So I think...
Never?
I mean, not for the first... Wow.
Yeah. That's what the first few. That's initially just having me a catch and shoot guy, but I think his ceiling includes him being a guy who's shooting off the bounce.
Yeah, I think. I mean, again, I'm more worried about the defense, the IQ, and the effort than than the talent, because the talent is there, and there's a reason he's going to be a top five pick, top seven pick.
Right.
But there's also the reason he's not going to be the number one or number two pick, right? Because I think in a vacuum, if you just look at him, you could make an argument that he could go two. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I might make that argument.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. I gotta watch more of these guys.
That's my point, but I think
he just makes sense to me, man. I think that's the biggest, my best way I can put it. There's some of these other prospects, and it's funny watching him play against Pokuševski in these games. It's like, I'm not saying Pokuševski can't be good. I just don't, he makes no sense to me. I don't know what it's going to really look like if it is good. And again, same thing with Domboya. Like, there's these guys where we're like, oh, they're these freaks, size, athleticism, whatever. And I like knowing with Jonathan Kuminga what it will look like if he figures it out. And it would be the same thing with Cam Reddish right now, 2 years in the league. I like knowing what it will look like if he figures it out. And I could see with Kuminga, maybe it's a couple years or something, but it's like a Jeremy Grant sort of thing where it's a slow progression. Maybe you're playing like stretch four at first. You're taking those basic shots. You're being asked to defend. And over time, your role increases and increases, and you get to be more. I think that, though, the tricky part, if you're drafting, if we're just doing a draft board, it might be really a while until it all comes together. And you look at a guy like Jeremy Grant. I mean, how many teams did he play for before he was on Detroit? You only got the 4 years on your rookie contract. Hamidou Diallo was an awesome athlete, you know, for the Thunder, and they basically did all his development for 4 years, and then he finally looked like an NBA player for the first time in his career once he went to Detroit. So I think, to me, that's part of like the risk with him, that he might not be good till he's on his second team.
Yeah,
and that's if you're drafting, you don't want that. Like, you don't want to be that team doing that.
No, I agree, and I try not to do the thing where it's like he was terrible on defense, but I'm also trying not to be like reading into the being really bad in a G League game type of thing as an 18-year-old, because clearly he wasn't, like, he's thinking about next year, right, in the draft. So like, I don't know. I think, yeah, I agree with all the positives. I think, I guess my point is, of the five we've done so far, I think he's got the lowest. He's got an incredibly high ceiling, probably a higher ceiling than Mobley,
right?
Probably higher ceiling than even Suggs. But I think if it doesn't work, it could, like, he's probably got the lowest floor too, out of the five we've done.
And not, just to continue to be positive guy, I will go into negative stuff. But is it fair to say that ceiling, he has the highest ceiling of all five of them? Because what's Cade's ceiling?
As far as, I mean, a franchise guard who's a 10-time All-Star.
Right. Cade's got that.
I think we do this thing with ceilings where it's like,
yeah,
we look too much into the athleticism part of the ceiling.
Which I'm for sure doing right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, is Cade a worse athlete than Kuminga? Yeah.
But so that, are we just ranking athleticism?
Correct. Because I think we do that a lot of times where it's...
Because then we could say Mobley too. Okay.
Correct. So, no, I think Cade has the highest ceiling.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Because I think Cade's ceiling is, like, call me crazy, but like, if in 7 years, if Cade Cunningham wins the MVP, I'm not going to be like shocked. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think he's going to be that level, that tier of guys.
Mm-hmm. A superstar. I don't know with Kuminga. I could see him being really good. I really could. I don't know. I guess I haven't really pinned that down because I do see so much downside, or I do see so many like questions with engagement and stuff, and I wonder, like,
what did you think of his feel offensively?
Awful. I mean,
and I wasn't trying to, like, like a loaded question, but I just, because no. I
sometimes though it was nice. It was so weird because it would go both ways. It'd be like bam bam bam, and he's pulling up, he's created space, and he knocks down a beautiful shot, and it's the same thing, he's driving and then he dumps it off to the Knicks guy or whatever.
The defense.
That happened too. I mean, more often than not, it was that shot looked terrible and or that pass went to the other team. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Not to be like, there were flashes there, but the flashes were really good, and the passing downsides and shot selection downsides were really bad. He really struggled to, when he was going to the basket and has to like come to, you know, he doesn't have a layup there, and he has to come to 2 feet and start pump faking around. He threw it into the defender a bunch of times, missed shots terribly. Paul Reed guarded him that one game against the Sixers G League team, erased him at the rim every time. He in the G League, he unless he was dunking, like catching an alley-oop, and or just like going in and dunking on somebody, every time he just tried to drive to the rim, he was terrible at finishing.
So was Ant for the first half of the season too.
Good call.
And then he figured it out, and figured it out as relative. He got a lot better.
Yeah.
And made adjustments and really improved. So yeah, I keep going.
Is he going to get, actually Ant's kind of an interesting one. Like I would, it's the Wolves gave Ant so much, right? They gave him so much bandwidth.
And the best thing that happened to Ant was D'Lo getting hurt.
Exactly. So now what happened, like, is another team going to give Kuminga, like, a ton of room to... Is another team going to give Kuminga Anthony Edwards-type bandwidth? I doubt it. Just because he is even, like, he seems even more, like,
I mean, who could draft? Who could draft him? Let me pull up the...
Yeah. So, well, we got... Pistons 1, Rockets 2, Cavs 3, Raptors 4, Magic 5. Magic?
Magic might give him
kind of the type space. Thunder 6. They kind of are...
Not with Shea. I mean, I think like...
That's true. But...
Not the Raptors.
You want him to work with a guard too.
Yeah. But I'm saying like... Ant got the keys because D'Lo got hurt and the Wolves were bad. And they were like, let's just give him the ball. Mm-hmm. And it was a good move. I'm not saying it was.
Yeah.
But like, that pieces fell into place for Ant. It wasn't like that day one. So, I mean, whoever. It's going to depend on injuries and things like that, how the season's going.
Right. Which is just kind of interesting with this whole exercise of not that we're like doing this to be right or wrong, but, you know, the way we're going to kind of look at it is like, oh, 5 years from now, what? And even when we did last year, what was Anthony Edwards? What's James Wiseman? What's, you know, what did these guys become? But it's also like a process of right away. You know, who are you right away? Can your team afford to invest in you? And it's just, I think James Wiseman is a good example of this last year, where when it's a dude who's going to take a little while, you know, that's can be hard. Depending on, and obviously the Warriors are all the way on that one side of the spectrum, but like, if Kuminga gets drafted by the Raptors, is he going to play next year? Like, are we doing the same thing with, you know, with Wiseman and the Raptors? Like, oh, why didn't they trade? Why don't they trade that pick? Why didn't they trade the Wiseman? I mean, in a weird way, Wiseman and Kuminga are kind of similar too. What Wiseman was the freakiest athlete of last year's draft, right? Or just like physical specimen.
Yeah.
And I would say Kuminga is the craziest physical specimen. Some people might say Mobley, but.
I would say Kuminga.
But isn't that kind of similar to Wiseman? You know what I'm saying?
In a way, I think they play different positions.
Well, of course.
So if you just want to take who's the freakiest dude in the top 10?
But my point is that James Wiseman went 2 last year. And as pretty much everyone, nobody thought that was necessarily like a bad pick at the time.
No, not at all.
And he played 3 college games, and teams were going off of his high school tape, and they drafted him because he... You know, he looked freaky. And now with Kuminga, there's just more tape on him because he played, you know, he played in the G League.
Against better competition.
So.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I just, again, it's different positions though, right?
I think teams are going to be high on him. And I don't know if that's right or wrong because I don't know if I.
But I think if he's.
Like, I think he's going to go over Suggs for sure.
Do you?
Yeah. Again, just.
What about the Patrick Williams comparison?
Yeah.
Because I kind of...
Again, Patrick Williams... Remember when we recorded? We're like, should we even do Patrick Williams? Like, might not be a lottery pick. He went 4.
Yeah. So, I meant more of... You're right. I think... But for me, like, I remember watching Patrick Williams, and I'm like, I don't know. I see all the pluses, and I see all the minuses, and I don't know which way is pulling me.
Yeah.
And I just... Again, that's without... And,
that's a good point.
And I think...
Because I was low on... Yeah. Why was I low on Williams and... Like Kuminga, I don't.
I was going to ask you that. That was my next question. But, and I think this is where.
Call me in a different year. Last year was tough.
This is where not having the chance to talk to a kid and watch him interact with teammates.
Totally.
And like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I have no idea what this means, but like Kuminga transferred 3 times in high school. He went to the, like, he didn't take the traditional route. So there are some like
Yeah, he was lived in the Congo till he was 14.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, and that's the stuff that would be really fun to, I don't know.
No, yeah. Well, it's gonna be obviously a huge factor in assessing both Kuminga and Green is getting to know them, you know, getting a better feeling of what they are like as men, you know. Right. And yeah, these guys are all really talented.
Yeah,
these top five guys, and you know, we'll get to Scotty Barnes and those guys too. You know, maybe we'll end up feeling that they belong in this group as well. But
well, I think it's crazy because this draft compared to last draft is, and again, it's, you can never determine a draft until they get more than a year or two into the league, right? But this draft is on paper way better, right? Yeah. Like, there are the downsides, the negatives of the top five picks in this draft are so much smaller than the downsides we had with Wiseman and Ant and LaMelo and Patrick Williams was four. Who's five? Who am I missing?
I'm drawing a blank. No, I'm all the way in on this one.
So am I.
No. I
but do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which is crazy, the difference. It's 180 degree difference. And I'm not saying this draft is going to be better, but I'm saying at this point in where we are, this draft is certainly better.
Than where we were a year ago doing this.
Correct.
For sure. Yet at the same time, this shows you how wild it is. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure there's going to be two guys from this class that are going to be better than Ant and LaMelo.
Maybe not. Definitely. Yeah.
Which, you know, it just, that's why so much of this is undetermined, and why I know we're poking at the athleticism stuff like that, but could go, you know, that could go a long way, and it can swing both ways. It can totally swing both ways, and you overhype someone because of their athleticism. But it is the path to being surprisingly great. That's what it was for Kawhi, right? You know, that's why Paul, you know, and it took Paul George like a couple of years too. I think, like, if Kuminga goes to the Magic next year and gets the Anthony Edwards type usage, I don't think he'll be as good as Anthony Edwards. Do I think year three in that Jonathan Kuminga could be a really good player, like growing from that? Yeah, but it just took the first half of the season, then he started getting it. And Kuminga, I think it's going to take longer. I think the same thing with Mobley. Personally, well, I don't think they'll be good as rookies. Yet, like them both as prospects.
That's the important thing. There's a difference between having a good rookie year and having a good NBA career. You know what I mean? Like you can't judge.
Totally.
Yeah. So to put you on the spot, how would you rank the five that we've done in a vacuum? Don't worry about who's drafting.
Cade one for sure. And then, as of now, and you know, when the time comes, I'll go back and look at Suggs and Mobley a little bit more. But I'd go Cade 1, Green 2, Kuminga 3, Mobley 4, Suggs 5. Which I think is different. I sent you that consensus board thing. Kuminga was 6th on that.
Were Suggs 4, 5? Was Scotty Barnes 5? Who was 5?
Yeah, Scotty Barnes was 5. So I think kind of the actual consensus right now is Cunningham is 1. Green is 2, yep. Mobley's 3, Suggs is 4, and then Barnes and Kuminga are kind of like 5-6. That's like the averaging them all out. Yeah. What's your 5 right now?
Man, this is subject to change. Cade's 1. I think Jalen Green's 2. And then 3, 4, 5. I guess I would go Mobley, Suggs, Kuminga.
Yeah.
But I feel good about Cade, obviously, and I think Jalen's too. But then again, like the hard thing is Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs are, it kind of depends what you value, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're so different.
Right. And I think why you have Jalen Green at 2, why I have Jalen Green at 2 is that it's that superstar.
Yeah.
Upside, you know? And I think Jalen Suggs has really like third best player. That's really good third best player upside.
Yeah, like a Drew Holiday. Like where he is.
Yeah, awesome player.
Awesome, yeah.
Actually, that's a really good comp.
Yeah.
And I don't know, ultimately, man, if I'm the freaking Cavs or the Magic, I'm going for
a home run.
I just think that's...
Well, I think if you look at the young guys in the league right now, you can go down the list. Like, you've got Tatum, and you've got Booker, and you've got, you know, name your other wings, right? I'm blanking right now. Like, Dame and Steph and all these guys who could be the worst defender in the league.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they are, but, like, Jason Tatum could be the worst defender in the league. And he's still incredibly valuable because mm-hmm. with the ball in his hands, he's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jalen Green, I'm not saying it's a lock, but I think Jalen Green could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now that type of scorer, a hard, not Harden level, but that in that top
Shea, tier. I think Shea is the thing.
In that top tier where it doesn't really matter. Like, you want him to be good in other areas, but those don't really matter because he's just so good with the ball and can score, get to the free throw line, make his free throws, make threes, hit, you know, tough, like, end of the shot clock. You watch these playoff games, man. So many of these possessions come down to like 7 seconds. Like, that's why mm-hmm. Chris Paul's so good and Booker is so good, because it's like, go hit a tough shot in these games that matter. And I think Jalen Green is awesome at that.
And Jalen Suggs, that is not what he's at least currently best at.
Correct. And that's right.
Not that he's not clutch. Obviously, he's clutch.
Yeah.
What he did, you know. But yeah, ball in his hand, end of the shot clock, end of the shot clock more than end of the game is important, because that happens so much more often. And those are really, really valuable players, you know, in the league right now. And I think Jalen Green has a better chance at becoming very good at that than Jalen Suggs does. Jalen Suggs has a far higher chance of making an all-defensive team.
Definitely.
And probably, like, he'll probably be like Matisse Thybulle level, makes all-defense, but Thybulle's like second, made it his second year.
Right.
So... I dislike any of them. None of these five guys am I like the one I'm honestly most on is Mobley. And that's just kind of comes down to the idea of kind of questioning his shot, because I think that'll be really important given his frame to be able to make jumpers at a decently high level. And then he's small. I wonder how he'll be able to score on the interior and defend against other bigs on the interior.
See, I love, like, watching these playoffs again. Not like Gobert couldn't play. Mm-hmm. Brook Lopez can't play in a lot of these games. I think he's going to be like the Ayton, where he's going to play 38 minutes a game, and you're never going to worry about him. You know, he's going to be out there. You know, you're never going to throw. I mean, not never, mm-hmm. but you're rarely going to just throw the ball to Ayton and say, go get a bucket. But he's, you know, a good defender. He rebounds his butt off. Like, that's kind of the Mobley route that I see, and that's why I like him.
Yeah, no,
he's never going to be unplayable like some of these other centers.
Yeah, you know, I hear what you're saying, but also with DeAndre Ayton, and I think DeAndre Ayton's been awesome in all of this, but is DeAndre Ayton ever going to be a guy that is the number one on his team?
No.
And, you know, so is Mobley?
No. But DeAndre Ayton was also the first overall pick.
Yeah.
So, like,
but that was a bad first overall pick.
In hindsight, yeah. But at the time, it wasn't. That's what people have to remember.
I shouldn't have said a bad number one overall pick. There's just been, and time has shown, that the guards, the guys that can create as point guards and score.
It's funny how it works, though, because I think had they taken Luka, which in hindsight they should have, they would not be in the finals right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
no, it is.
It's weird how that
works. There are not rights and wrongs in this of what we're doing. It's just watching these guys, and I think it's fun. It's such an interesting activity to apply what we're seeing these guys be at 19 into not just the NBA, but where we think the NBA is going. And that is it's a particular bigs, you know? It's a tricky part of the calculation. Well, Will, this was fun. We'll get back, we'll start maybe hammering out more of these more frequently, probably not as in-depth, in the coming weeks. 3 weeks, exactly, till draft night. Yep. Isn't that nuts? Thanks for doing it. He's Will DeBerg again, University of St. Thomas, men's assistant basketball coach. You can follow him on Twitter at WDeBerg14. I'm Dane at Dane Moore MBA. I'll be back again with another episode on something this weekend, and I will talk to you then. Till then, I'm Dane. Peace out. Feeling man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah.